Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Joining us this week is Alice Bufkin, Associate Executive Director for Policy and Advocacy at the Citizens Committee for Children of New York, which is part of the Campaign for Healthy Minds, Healthy Kids. That's a coalition of behavioral health, mental health, and substance use providers, advocates, and families that seek to create the public and political will, they say, needed to ensure that all children and adolescents in New York receive the high-quality behavioral health services they need. To do this, the coalition says, we must prioritize children's behavioral health across the state's investments and systems. We'll talk about all of that and much more. But first, we welcome Alice Bufkin.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
So great to have you. Now, obviously, your primary role with the Citizens Committee for Children of New York. Why don't you talk a little bit about that, how you got involved with the coalition, what the coalition is, and anything you want to say about that?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Citizens Committee for Children is a children's advocacy organization, and we fight to ensure that every New York child has access to the services they need, that they're healthy, housed, educated, and safe. And as part of that work, we work with many incredible organizations and young people and parents on different issues and campaigns. And one of the campaigns that we view as critically important in the state is the Healthy Minds, Healthy Kids campaign. This is a campaign that formed a number of years ago in response to the crisis that is facing children and adolescents who are seeking to access mental health and substance use disorder services and simply cannot find the care they need, and the many repercussions that has on the lives of families throughout the state. This is a campaign made up of parents, of young people, of providers, of advocates who are really fighting to ensure that we have access across the state for children, adolescents, and families. And an important part of our campaign is actually our Youth Caregiver Council, which formed a couple of years ago. And that is made up of young people and parents from all over the state who struggle to access mental health services and want to make the state a better place for other children who are seeking care. And so that is a fantastic group of folks who have their own direct experiences with trying to seek care for themselves or for their children and are actively advocating and meeting regularly to fight for these services for other young people and families.
Interesting. So you were at the Capitol on Monday rallying, and were you rallying in general for these issues, or are you looking at specific legislation?
Yes. So our campaign this year has two primary issues that we're really fighting for. So the first of these is we are seeking a $195 million investment in the state budget to address what is a really severe waitlist crisis that's plaguing children and families seeking these mental health and substance use disorder services. So we're talking about children who are waiting for weeks, for months, for years sometimes, in order to get the care they need. And these are services that they need desperately. These are not things that can wait. These are not services that can wait. And we know that the reason we have such a severe waitlist crisis is we have a widespread provider shortage throughout the state. We just don't have the number of professionals we need to serve children. And that's what's making them wait. That's what's making families wait. And that's what's making them experience all the different repercussions that happen when your child is waiting for services that they desperately need. And so with this $195 million investment, we could actually add 1,300 additional behavioral health professionals to the state and serve 26,000 additional children. So we view that as a first step towards actually reversing course on where the state is and actually enhancing capacity and really targeting these wait lists that families and children are facing. So that's our first ask, and that's really related to the Medicaid system. So really making sure that our Medicaid services, and specifically outpatient services, which are really those kind of frontline, early, upstream preventive services, are funded adequately. Again, these are the kinds of services that you need to get to children early, because if they don't get the care they need early, we see their needs become more complex and more acute. They end up cycling in and out of emergency rooms and hospitals. They end up with involvement in the police because they don't have adequate support in their schools and communities. We see them ending up in residential treatment settings. We don't want any of those long-term impacts. We want children to get care as early as possible. And so we're really fighting to make sure that the state is investing upstream in children and families. So that's our first priority. Our second priority is more related to the commercial insurance side. So in New York, there is actually no requirement that commercial plans cover the full array of mental health and SUD services that children need. So let's say you are a parent and you think you have commercial insurance through your work, and you pick up the phone, you try to call for these services, and you discover that actually, your plan just doesn't cover the care that your child needs. There's no requirement that they do so. And so what we are seeking is to require the commercial plans to cover the same array of mental health and substance use disorder services that Medicaid does. And we think through that parity, we can really start to address the challenges many of these families are facing in accessing services.
We are speaking with Alice Bufkin. She is Associate Executive Director for Policy and Advocacy at the City's Committee for Children of New York, part of the Campaign for Healthy Minds, Healthy Kids. This is a coalition of health and substance use providers, advocates, and families. They want to get better care for children and their mental health. Can you put a face on this for us? Can you tell us about one story about a child and what's happened? Also, I see that the statistics are dire when you say there's short staffing. You know, give us some more numbers on, for example, psychiatrists available across the state.
Yes, I'd be happy to. I mean, so Healthy Minds, Healthy Kids in recent months has conducted a really broad array of surveys and studies to really identify the depth of the need in the state. And honestly, it's really difficult to overestimate how challenging it is in the state to access care and what the repercussions are for families. So in the first of one of these studies that HMHK conducted, we contracted with a group called Health Management Associates. And what the study does is it looks at the gap between the number of children who need outpatient services and those who are actually receiving them. So again, outpatient services are these array of really upstream preventive services. A child will live at home while they're getting treatment as opposed to needing to be hospitalized overnight or staying overnight in a residential setting for weeks or months. These are really frontline services. And unfortunately, when this study was conducted, the gap between the number of children who need care and those who are actually getting it is enormous. We found that at best, one in four children and adolescents needing outpatient care are receiving them. That means that three in four children are not getting the types of preventive services they need. So that's one area where we obviously there's an enormous crisis in access. A second study we conducted to understand what their experiences are with waitlists. So we asked, do you have wait lists? Have you had to pause intakes because you don't have enough capacity, you don't have enough providers? Have families had to wait for long periods of time to get care? And overwhelmingly, the answer is yes, yes, and yes. So for instance, 70 to 80% of a really important kind of service called Children and Family Treatment and Support Services, these providers have paused new intakes. So 70 to 80% of CFTSS providers have paused new intakes in the past 12 months. 70% of clinical mental health providers say they have waiting lists or it took at least 10 days from a referral to an appointment. And many providers report wait times of 50 days or more to get care. And some even reported wait times of over a year. So we are talking about overwhelmingly the system is unable to provide the timely care that children and families need. And if you were a child and you had a broken arm, or your appendix burst, and you showed up in a facility and they said, we'll get to you in 50 days, or we can't take you, go somewhere else, or we'll find you maybe in a couple months. We would never allow that, right? But that is what we're seeing when children have a mental health crisis and a deep mental health need. And because we're not getting them the care early, we are seeing their needs become much more intense, much more acute, and that has so many repercussions for families. And that's what actually leads us to the third study we conducted, where we worked with our very good partners on this campaign, Families Together in New York State, who do really great work in engaging families and understanding their experiences. And we did an anonymous survey just to understand, what does it mean to be on a wait list? What is it beyond just, it's not just about waiting. There are things that happen to families while they're waiting that have long-term repercussions for their lives and for their families. And the survey responses revealed that families are just unable to access timely care, and that results in hospitalizations, police involvement, lost education, job loss, family anxiety, and so many other harms. And I will say that, you know, this survey really reinforced what we know from the families we work directly with in our Youth Caregiver Council. We know, you know, members of our council, parents who've had to quit their jobs and homeschool because their very young child was kicked out of school because they didn't have the behavioral health services that she needed. This is a amazing, bright, fantastic young person who was forced out of school because they couldn't support her mental health needs. And now her parent has had to quit her job, which has really changed their entire family's sort of trajectory in their lives. And these parents are incredible. They're so committed to their kids, but they're just being failed by the state. We have other parents whose children have attempted suicide multiple times, who live in fear of what could happen. We have parents who've had to live apart from their children for months, even years, sometimes because their child has needed more intensive care. They've missed enormous milestones in their child's life. because they never got the care they needed early on. And now they've had to end up in a much more intensive setting, a setting where they're not able to stay at home in their community. They're having to actually go, you know, far away from home and spend time overnight. And that's not what we want. Our whole aim is to get children and families the care they need as early as possible so that we're not seeing these harms that families are experiencing when they are waiting for services that they need right now. They need them today.
Well, and one of the major issues, obviously, in our society and that continues to impact minority communities is racism. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I mean, racism is clearly an impact on access to care, as well as the stressors that families are experiencing. So many of the issues that exacerbate or bring to light some of the mental health needs that young people have are because of their environment and, you know, the community they live in, where they may be experiencing racism, discrimination. Obviously, we have an enormous anti-immigrant movement at the federal level, and the deep harms that can have when young people are hearing about those issues impacting their families. So there's both the community stressors of that, the discriminatory practices, and sort of the long time entrenched systemic issues that lead to a lot of families of color experiencing greater hardships, and that's just because the systems have for so long been set against them. And so that can mean that if they've had more supportive environments, more long-term supports, they might have been able to weather the storm of their mental health needs, but they're put in a position where they just haven't had those supports. And then we also know that we have a real lack of adequate capacity within our state of professionals of color. So we know a lot of children, Black and brown children, really respond to having a mental health provider who looks like them, who has had their experience, who can speak to them. And unfortunately, we have a sort of an overwhelmingly white professional system in our state. And so that's something that we also need to be looking at is upstream, how can we support BIPOC providers? How can we support multilingual providers? Because that's another major issue, is not being able to provide a provider who speaks in a language other than English. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done to both address a lot of the systemic inequities in our state that are harming the mental well-being of children and families, but then also trying to ensure that our mental health and substance use professionals really look like the communities that they're serving. Because right now, we don't have that in our state.
We are speaking with Alice Bufkin. She is part of the Campaign for Healthy Minds, Healthy Kids, this coalition that's trying to help stave off problems with mental health in children and families. She is the Associate Executive Director for Policy and Advocacy at the Citizens Committee for Children of New York, which is part of this coalition, of course. Now, when you're up at the legislature and you're lobbying, I'm guessing you're giving them arguments to fund these programs you want funded, right?
Yes, very much.
And you're not able to lobby them with money, with campaign contributions.
Got it, yes.
So those that can often get their legislation they want. What is going to convince the legislature to move forward on this when you don't have that? You only have the arguments to be made. And then you were just talking about racism. Legislators are people. How much does that play in to legislation not getting passed or getting passed?
Yeah. So I think obviously, I will say that in this space, I think we're not unique in that, so much of the advocacy that I know our organization and so many of our partner organizations throughout the state do is trying to fight for investments for children and families and make the argument that when you invest in children now, you see the benefits long term. You see the benefits for families, you see the benefits for communities, and you also see the benefits for states. Children who don't get the care they need early become adults with much more complex needs. And so our number one priority is the well-being of children and families. All we care about is wanting to make sure that kids and adolescents and families get the care they need early, and we see what happens when they don't. We see the emergency rooms, the hospitalizations, the long-term stressors on families, and worst case scenario, we see loss of life, which is the absolute worst tragedy we can have in this space. But we also have to make the argument with the state, which is true, which is that when needs become more complex, the solutions to address them are more complex and more expensive. If you have a young person who needed care at 10 and then needed more care at 12 and needed even more intensive care at 15, and now they're 22 and they never got the care they needed and they are struggling with you know, they may be struggling with accessing a job, they may be struggling with housing, you know, and then they become an older adult. And it's not to say the adult services are there. There's certainly, we don't have adequate adult services either. But if we never invest early, if we never get ahead of this, we will continue to repeat this cycle of children becoming adults with more intensive needs. And that has a great cost to the state too, because we know that the types of, you know, emergency rooms, we know that that issues of housing and homelessness, struggles and access, you know, having jobs, these are all things that happen when we don't get care to people early.
Substance abuse,
exactly. You know, these things are obviously deeply interrelated and are even harder to address when children become adults. And, you know, the adults that are struggling didn't come out of nowhere. They didn't magically appear with a really intense array of needs, right? These things happened over time. They start in childhood and they evolve over time. The longer you go without your needs being met, the more complex and difficult they are to address. We don't want any New York to be suffering to not get the care they need. And so our argument is, again, to say the further we can intervene, the better we can see outcomes for children and for families, because a child, you know, more than anyone else, is not their own unit. They're not a small adult. They're not operating by themselves. They're part of an ecosystem, right? They're part of a family. They're part of a school. They may be involved in multiple systems. They have complex needs. And I'll say that complexity of children's needs is also part of why our $195 million investment is so necessary, because for too long, the children's behavioral health system has really not recognized that complexity, that children are not small adults, that they do have, you know, a complex connections in their families and their communities, and that working with them requires different skills and different time. And the way that our rates in our state are set up really doesn't accommodate that, really doesn't acknowledge that. And so part of the rate proposal we have was developed, you know, through a really careful consideration with providers to understand what would it take to stop hemorrhaging providers and instead actually increase capacity. And some of their very specific recommendations were, you need to fund rates for kids, not for adults. You need to actually have enhancements to recognize the complexity of children's needs. And so that's one piece of that $195 million ask that's baked into there. So sort of to return to your original question, I mean, I think that the work of all advocates for children, for families, for marginalized people is to say that has to be the focus. We have to, you know, appeal to the better natures of our state leaders. And I think that there are amazing champions at the state level. And I think that many of them really believe in this, and we need to continue to push them to make this their priority. And there's a lot of other needs in the state. That's always a challenge. Our state has a lot of needs. And so really trying to uplift that this is in fact a crisis issue, and that we will continue to just be chipping away at the edges until we make really substantial investments is really something that we try to bring to the legislature and to the governor.
You are listening to The Capital Connection. I'm David Gustina. With us is Alice Bufkin from the Campaign for Healthy Minds, Healthy Kids, a coalition of behavioral health, mental health, and substance use providers, advocates, and families seeking to create the public and political will to ensure children and adolescents get the proper mental health care. Now, it seems to me Governor Kathy Hochul is listening when it comes to child care, right? She's got the child tax credit, which will deliver up to $1,000 per child. She's mentioned a number of other services that would add up to almost $5,000 for some families. And she's also pushed this initiative to remove cell phones from schools, another thing that's impacting children's mental health. So in some ways, the state is recognizing this, right?
Yeah. I think we have been enormously grateful to have a governor who talks about mental health, who clearly recognizes that this is a serious issue, who, you know, really from the earliest days of her stepping to office, uplifted mental health needs of both adults and children as critical. And so we're very grateful because, you know, without that opening, without that conversation, it's even harder to get momentum on these issues. So really want to, you know, have credit towards Governor Hochul for being so open and really recognizing these needs. I think what has been a real challenge, though, is that when you really drill down to what is needed, it is investments. It is a really substantive investment in the children's mental health and substance use disorder space, in the behavioral health space. And what we've seen is that a lot of the investments that we've seen coming out of the budget in recent years, a lot have been targeted at adults. A lot have been targeted at beds rather than at the workforce that actually directly provides the services. And a lot of the youth programs that have been invested in, while they're great, they're really about, do you happen to be in the community where we're funding this one program, right? And so these are not necessarily statewide solutions that are addressing the chronic underinvestment in the children's behavioral health system. And to be clear, this is something that was, you know, this is not an issue that just came up during the Hochul administration. We have seen decades and decades of underinvestment in children's mental health. I mean, for a long time, I don't even think there was an acknowledgement that these were important issues. And so we're really fighting back against a deeply underfunded system. But our job as advocates is to draw attention to what are the solutions that are fundamentally needed. And the reality is when we talk to parents, when we look at the data, when we talk to providers, it all says the same story, that children are desperately seeking care that isn't there right now. And while we can, there are a lot of sort of policies around social media and cell phones that, you know, can have a beneficial effect, the most important thing that children need is services when they need them, and they need them as far upstream as possible. And so I think that is really what we're pushing for, is saying that without a statewide investment in the right kind of care, we will continue to be sort of putting Band-Aids on the system and on the needs of children and families. So that's really where we're trying to focus on, is these major investments. And then also, as I said, on the commercial insurance side, I also want to give credit to Governor Hochul, because she has been, I think, really innovative and thoughtful in looking at the role of commercial insurance and holding them accountable for you know, providing the care to their clients that they need. There was a really great change that happened last year that Healthy Minds, Healthy Kids advocated for, but many others had been fighting for years, to require our commercial plans to cover behavioral health services at the same rate as Medicaid. So sort of bizarrely, our commercial plans in New York pay lower rates on average for, you know, mental health and substance use disorder services, which I think is counterintuitive for a lot of people. And Governor Hochul actually supported requiring those plans to pay the same rate as Medicaid. And so that has been great that passed last year. And now we're, you know, sort of really looking at implementation and enforcement. But the next frontier, as I mentioned earlier, is that these plans are not required to cover the full array of services that children and families need. And this is not an academic issue. I want to be clear. Like, this might sound a little bit in the weeds or wonky, but I want to share a story of, one of the, again, I've mentioned before, our great partners, Families Together in New York State. They talk directly with families. And one parent upstate told them about her story and trying to access commercial insurance. Her son had, really serious mental health needs, was struggling with suicidality, had ER visits. And the services that he needed were a set of services called home and community-based services and children and family treatment and support services. Those are two of those outpatient services I've been talking about, the kinds that we're really trying to enhance rates for and enhance access to. But those services aren't covered by commercial insurance. There is a way in our state to temporarily access those services if you have commercial insurance. And after a long, laborious process, this parent was able to actually connect her son to those services. He was really improving. They were finally feeling hope about his needs getting less intense, him getting the care he needed. But then the period of sort of temporary eligibility expired, and they were knocked out of those programs. And the worst case scenario happened, which is her son lost hope and he completed suicide because he was back on a wait list for services that he knew. Mm. You know, these are not like administrative tweaks. These are things that impact the lives of New Yorkers every day, whether they're on Medicaid or whether they're on commercial insurance. There's different levers and different needs, but they can't get the care they need. And so we're really trying to look at the system as a whole and make the policy changes and the investments that will really change families' lives and get the care they need.
All right. Well, you have the national political scene right now that has moved more to the right. And we see what DOGE is doing, cutting all sorts of services, organizations, and the latest, the Department of Education, looking to be on the chopping block. And this idea that many Republicans and others who are conservative say we shouldn't be paying for this stuff, you know, the pick yourselves up by the bootstraps crowd. And, you know, even some will say, you know, why should I be paying school taxes when I don't have any children in schools? So with the overarching national scene, how are you guys preparing what could be, you know, an onslaught on services that could impact children?
Yeah, so I will say, you know, again, CCC as a, you know, multi-issue children's advocacy organization, there's really not any corner of our work where we're not deeply experiencing these threats and really trying to prepare for what's happening at the federal level. There's a lot of fear, confusion. You know, it's a multi-headed Medusa right now we're looking at, right? There's so many different attacks on the issues that impact families and children in our state that it can sometimes be hard to wrap your head around. And I think that's part of the intent, right? That's part of the intent is to have a real onslaught of these attacks so that it can be harder to organize and figure out how do you protect against these potential cuts, these potential policy changes. Part of it is one day at a time. Part of it is partnering with other groups and other people throughout the state to really identify what is the strategy, whether it's legal at the national level, whether it's the state level, to protect families and children and the services that they need. What I'll say is on the space of children's mental health, as in many other areas, anyone can be impacted. Anyone's family member can be impacted by mental health needs. It doesn't matter what party you're a part of. It doesn't matter your income level. Although, of course, as we discussed earlier, there are a lot of systemic inequities, racism, discrimination, and things that can make things more challenging for particularly communities of color. So those are real, but mental health needs don't discriminate, right? You know, this is something we know people from all walks of life who've experienced, someone that they love who's needed this care and hasn't been able to get it. So that's something we want to push on. And then the other piece we want to push on is, you know, in New York State, we have the benefit of state leaders who are committed to enhancing care for children and families, not cutting it. And I think this is a space where our message is this is the time for our state leaders to step up and say, this is when we need to be doing more. We will not step back in the face of this. We'll step forward. We will find ways to enhance funding for these services. If we need to replace funding, we'll find a way to do it. If we need to take legal recourses, you know, we hope we can rely on our attorney general and others to really fight in that path. And I think the overwhelming message has to be this is the time to be having a strong front and uplifting where the state can do more rather than stepping back.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. Our guest this week has been Alice Bufkin. She's the Associate Executive Director for Policy and Advocacy at the Citizens Committee for Children of New York. She's also part of this coalition, the Campaign for Healthy Minds, Healthy Kids. And I applaud you for your efforts. I wish you the best of luck in trying to secure the funds. And I hope you'll come back and talk more in the future.
I would love to. Thank you.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina.